listener production.
Okay, are you recording?
Good people, you are listening to episode 177 of the Howie Games Part A, featuring the Open Champion from Queensland, Cameron Smith.
Puts a little more pressure on this one. Brilliant, quite brilliant. What a back nine.
Incredible golf today by Smith.
Cam is a local boy made good type of story. He started out on the Aussie tour, then he went to Asia, then Cam got a start in America, grew a magnificent, magnificent mullet, started winning big, then won a major, then at the height of his powers, Cam shocked the golfing world by joining LIV Golf. Cam's fee to join LIV is unknown, but media reports put it in the $100 million-plus dollar region. Now, who knows how accurate that is? Whatever the fee, good luck to Cam as he has dedicated his life to the game.
So many lost and left behind, and no one seemed to care. Those who should seems like they're blind, pretending they're not there. Can't they see they hold the key? Could make things better if they try. Oh my Jaja, tell me why won't they open up their eyes?
Cam, he is as Aussie as they come. He's got no quasi-US accent, no arrogance, no sense of entitlement. Just a dude wearing a Queensland Maroons jumper who loves his mates, his family, the odd bevy, and whacking golf balls really, really well. Enjoy the story of Cameron Smith, humble superstar.
So when you search and then you find and know just where to go and thoughts that once used to cloud your mind, you see clearly and now you know mystery, what is to be revealed in King Selassie. Come on children, trot with me, we want to reach Mount Sinai.
Welcome to the Howie Games. An Australian, a proud Australian that lives in America. He won on the Australasian Tour, the US Tour, the LIV Tour. He's the Open Champion. His name is Cam Smith. We've been trying to organise this for a while. I am pumped to have him on the show. Smithy, I'm going to call you Smithy because you look like a Smithy. How you going, mate? It's great to see you. Thanks for joining me on the Howie Games.
Yeah, no worries, mate. Thanks for having me. I'm glad we could make this work out.
A few technical difficulties early on today. What happened? You shut down the Wi-Fi at your place. Your whole world's gone down. What's going on?
Yeah, Mrs. and I tried to watch some Yellowstone last night, and the Wi-Fi stopped working. And I've tried to fix it all day. I think I've spent about 30 minutes up in the room trying to unplug it and turn it on and off. I've tried every old trick in the book and just quite couldn't get it working. But here we are. Let's hope we last the time that we need.
Are you a technological whiz, or by the fact that you said you turned it on and off 30 times doesn't fill me with a great deal of confidence, to be fair?
Nah, I'm not. I'm a long way from it, to be honest. I'm about as old school as they get now, I think.
And where are you? So for everyone listening, you're coming in from Florida, yeah? Whereabouts?
I live in Jacksonville Beach in Florida. It's right up the northeast coast. Beautiful spot. Actually reminds me a lot of Brizzy. Very kind of low-key, very chill vibe. Lots of, I guess, rednecks around that I get along with. And, it's really good.
And what's a typical day? Like when you're not playing golf, when you're not at a tournament, a day at home relaxing or a day out and about, what's life in Jacksonville for you when you're chilling?
Yeah, when I'm chilling out, I guess I think the first thing that I try to do is obviously get some brekkie in me and then get into the gym. I try and keep pretty regimented with that stuff. I keep on top of the body, and even when I'm away from golf, I'm still trying to work on that. You know, as you get older and older, I've figured out the more you kind of have to work on that stuff. So I try and do that stuff most mornings, and, you know, the rest of the day might be a little bit of fishing, hanging out with mates, basically anything other than golf.
We'll get to fishing. So tell me about golf and fitness and you and when it became part of your regime. Was it when you were 10 or 12, or did the strength and fitness required come to you as you got a little bit older and you started to progress, mate?
I think I've been on top of it for a while now. I think my first big kind of step into the fitness world was when I got selected in the Queensland Academy of Sport. for golf, and those guys really took me under their wing. We had lots of good trainers there, and I think I went in there at probably 15 or 16, and I was a little rake back then, so I'm not sure what they thought I could do, but yeah, I've been at it now for, probably a solid 14 or 15 years.
And because the game's developed so much, like we see DeChambeau and these guys, you know, like athletes, tennis players, league players, AFL players, golfers seem to get bigger and stronger. You know, watching the Australian Open, they're big, big, tall, big, strong men and women these days. So what are you working on in the gym? Is it lifting weights, flexibility, cardio, a combination? Like what's a typical workout for you?
Yeah, so probably try and get in 4 lifts a week. You know, in the off season, it's pretty heavy stuff, trying to put on some muscle. And then during the season, it's, I guess, more about maintenance. You don't really want to stress the body out while you're trying to play, and probably more cardio, I guess, through the season, trying to get through those, you know, 72 holes in a breeze. But as soon as we put down the sticks for a little bit over Christmas, it's all about trying to put on some muscle and, yeah, just basically trying to be faster and stronger for next year.
And lifting, what type of lifting makes you faster and stronger on the golf course? So what's your general weights program to give us an idea?
At the moment, I guess we're coming into the start of the season. I do 2 legs, 2 upper bodies a week.
Okay.
You know, it's pretty basic stuff, to be honest. It's squats and deadlifts, the same stuff as they've been doing forever. And
yep.
Bench press, pull-ups, a few, I guess, golf-specific moves in there, but a lot of core work as well at the end of every session. And, you know, as I think, like I mentioned before, I think when the off-season hits, it's all about trying to move as much weight as we can, as many times as we can, and throughout the season we'll see the weight come down and the reps come down, and then kind of the velocity start to come up. So that's where we kind of get our speed from. It's not necessarily, I guess, changing the movement as such. It's just kind of variance in weights and variance in speed.
We've had all sorts of athletes on this show, some big, big units throwing some heavy steel around, and then your jockey types not doing so much. So to give me an idea, you said pull-ups or chin-ups. How many in a set are we trying to do there? How many reps?
Chin-ups is probably my worst exercise, especially over the Christmas break. I think I ate a little bit too much Christmas pudding and a few too many beers. So it's kind of hard to pull the big rig up at the moment. But I'm trying to do kind of 3 sets of 10 without any weight or any assistance. You know, as I get to the 3rd set, I definitely need a band or something to help me up those last few reps, yeah.
And do you hate leg day? Like when I go to the gym, as skinny and as lack of strength I have, when it says in the program leg day, I'm like, I just hate this day.
I actually really enjoy leg day. I hate chest and back. That's my day that I dread. I think for me, when I do my legs, especially when I'm practicing at the same time, I feel like I have a really stable base after I do that. Whereas when I do upper body, I kind of feel like really rounded and really tight, and I don't feel like I can really swing the club as well. So I'm probably different to 98% of, I guess, of the rest of the humans in the world. But
I hate it. So when you're trying to put on, in that off season, when you're trying to put on strength, just one more number for me. With your squats, what's on the bar? Is the bar bending or what's on there?
No, when we're trying to put on muscle, it's a few more reps and a little bit slower pace. Not really, you know, I'm a golfer. I'm not really a rugby player or anything like that. So at the moment I'm doing 10 reps, 3 sets of probably 80 to 90 kilos and just trying to move it quite slow.
That's still a pretty decent number. All right, that's the gym set up now. Fishing. I've got an 11-year-old that lives in this house, Smithy, and he is obsessed with fishing.
Perfect.
He'll want to know what's out and about Jacksonville way. What are you, obviously, throughout the year it's different, but at this time of year, so coming out of your winter, coming into spring, what's biting?
So inshore, we're pretty lucky here in Jacks. We have a lot of kind of diversity, I think, depending on what you really want to do. Inshore, we have redfish is basically all year round, and that's probably my favourite type of fishing. It's more of a kind of a sight casting. You go into the little back creeks and you try and find them and you see them swimming around, and that for me really gets the adrenaline pumping. But we go offshore a little bit too. you know, coming out of winter now, the wahoo is starting to bite. Ooh. And then we'll go into dolphin fish and tuna and stuff pretty soon.
How often in off-season are you going fishing a week?
I think even during the season when I'm at home, I probably try and get out 4 or 5 times a week, to be honest.
Right.
You know, most of the stuff is inshore. For us to get out in the big water, it's like a, you know, 60 or 70 mile journey out there. So it's a full day of fishing. I probably do that once a week, and the rest of the stuff inshore, and, you know, only be out there for a couple of hours.
What type of boat?
I have a little skiff which we can pole around in these creeks, and then have a big boat for going out there and having fun and, you know, pulling in those real big fish.
Do you ever sit out on your boat and think how good the game of golf has been to you, that you're living where you're living, you obviously live in a beautiful house, you've got the chance to go out with your mates and go fishing in a beautiful boat? Like, I know there's a lot of hard work involved, but... it's credit to all your hard work, I guess, that you're able to do that.
Yeah, mate. I was so grateful for everything golf has given me. And, you know, I think this stuff, even the stuff that I have now is, you know, I never really got that far in my dreams to, you know, to win golf tournaments, to have the nice house and have a couple of boats. That was all past my dreams, and to be where I am today is pretty amazing.
Well, it's credit to you, and as I said, it's all the credit and hard work. And people are going to be listening to this. They'll see a social media clip at some stage. But the fact you've got your Queensland Maroons 4X Rugby League State of Origin jumper on, I think says a lot about you, Smithy.
Yeah, I try and wear this as much as I can. It's kind of my around-the-house shirt, I guess. It's probably pretty filthy and stinky at the moment, to be honest, but... Yeah, I wear it a fair bit. Mm. Yeah, I love the rugby league. Obviously, the boys are coming up into their season at the moment, and, you know, I hope the Bronx get into that top four and really give a nice finals push. I think all the Broncos fans really want.
How are you going to feel about this new Wayne Bennett Dolphins operation coming in and stealing some lineup? When we're recording this, Smithy, so we're recording this mid-February, the first round of league... pre-season matches were on, and I just saw the numbers that Fox Sports put out, and the Dolphins game was the highest rating pre-season game in the history of the competition.
I didn't know that. Yeah, I think the Broncos fans are very loyal fans. I think prissy people in general are pretty loyal people, so I think for the guys that live up there, for sure they got another team to support, and the guys that live around there, but you know, for me, I've been a Broncos boy my whole life, and, you know, I'll continue to support those guys 100%.
How do you watch it?
There's an app over here. I guess it's around the world. It's just called Watch NRL. You pay like a subscription. It's like $100 a year or something, and you get to watch all the games, all the State of Origin, everything. It's actually really good for us guys over here.
Did you play rugby league as a kid growing up?
Yeah, I played basically everything I could as a kid. I played a bunch of cricket, rugby league, a bit of tennis here and there, just anything to get out in the yard or anything to get out in the park and play around with the boys. Yeah, it didn't take me too long to figure out that I wasn't quite cut out for rugby league. I think I only played that till I was probably about 12 or 13, so I didn't really have, you know, at that age, you're not really in a specific spot. But I remember seeing some, you know, bigger kids running at me going, I can't do this. quickly turned to golf.
Who was your rugby league hero? Who was the poster above the bedroom wall as far as league goes from the Bronx?
I think it was a really close probably between Gordy Tallis and Darren Lockyer for me.
Okay. And cricket? I didn't know you were into cricket. I work on cricket a lot. I spent the whole summer commentating cricket. Who was your cricket man or woman?
Probably Punter. He was pretty hard to go past. He was, I think he's one of the best to ever live, to be honest. And, you know, for me, hitting a golf ball kind of correlates to, I guess, hitting a cricket ball. So, yeah, I always liked those guys that could kind of slog it and aim it around the park as they do.
Have you ever played golf with Ricky? Obviously golf obsessed and very good at golf.
No, I've never played. I've seen him out at a few tournaments here and there, but, yeah, never played with him.
With the pro-ams, which are always fantastic, so for people that don't follow golf closely in the lead-up to the tournament, what day is the pro-am? Is it Tuesday or Wednesday typically?
Yeah, it's usually the day before we start, so you know, those events recently in Australia. We tee up in the Pro-Am on a Wednesday and then tee off on the Thursday, yeah.
So tell me about, I'm always fascinated to talk to pro golfers about the Pro-Am. Firstly, who have you played with, Cam, that's made an impression on you? Like everyone else stands on the tee and thinks, oh my gosh, I hope I get past the ladies tee because I'm playing with Cam Smith in the Pro-Am and there's a crowd and hard work. But who have you played with and you've thought, wow, I can't believe I'm playing golf with such and such?
Jeez, I don't know if anyone's really impressed me a lot with their golf game as far as amateur wise. Probably the most interesting Pro-Am partner I had was a guy who was an astronaut over here in the US wow. who had been out at the ISS a bunch of times. And, you know, my caddy and I, Sam and I remember we were just kind of gobsmacked. We found out after probably four or five holes, and I think he was pretty annoyed with us by the end of the round. I think we asked about 1,000 questions, and he was one of the nicest guys ever. But, yeah, learned a lot about space, I guess, and he was a legend of a guy too.
And what happens when you do get to the Pro-Am and you get the golfer that doesn't hit it past the ladies' tee or starts to duck hook off the tee every time? How do you go with that? You're trying to prepare for a tournament, but you're trying to look after the sponsors and do the right thing because you're a nice chap. How do you weigh it up when you're playing with an absolute shocker?
I mean, to be honest, I haven't played with too many guys that have really, you know, not been able to play. I think for the most part, they're kind of worried about what we're doing. For them, it's all kind of an exhibition, I guess. They're playing with a pro. They want to see what we do different to them. And, you know, if they are a bit of a hacker, a bit of a chopper, they just kind of pick it up halfway through the hole and try not to annoy you. It's a pretty good setup. It's not too bad.
All right. When is golf first crossing your path as a young man? What's your first memory of golf? Watching, playing in the backyard, a golf club, playing with your dad? What are your first memories of it?
Yeah, probably my first memory is walking around Wantima Country Club with my old fella. He used to have an old Pilgrim buggy.
Oh, yeah.
Had a seat on the front of it, and he bolted a 90mm plumbing pipe to the side of the sea and just had my little clubs out there. And I remember following him around. I was probably only, I don't even know, four or five at the time. And I don't think I knew it at the time, obviously, but that was probably, you know, that's probably one of the biggest reasons why I love golf. Just different people playing. You know, for me, I can play with dad, I can play with granddad. We can all have a good time. And, you know, that's the great thing about sport.
And when you're playing league and you're playing cricket and you're playing tennis, why golf though, Cam? What was it about golf that grabbed you as a young fella?
I think I was pretty naturally good at it, which made me kind of happy. I think as a young kid, you want that, you know, that boost of confidence, and golf really gave me that. I think the other sports I was kind of mediocre at. I didn't really suck at any sports. But golf was really where I excelled, and I felt like I could beat everyone. And, you know, even from a young age, I felt like I could do things that other kids my age couldn't do. And that was just kind of a really good feeling. And I think that's what kind of drew me in.
So were you a natural right from the start? When we're talking four or five, when you're saying you could do things that other kids couldn't do, at what age were people saying, and I ask this to all the athletes that come on the show, what age were you when people started saying, geez, this Cam Smith's good, or, oh, no, I've got to play against Cam Smith today?
I reckon, you know, probably one of my proudest moments still to this day was beating my old man. I think I was 12 at the time. He hates when I talk about it, but I remember it clear as day, you know, beating the old man as a young fella was, you know, it was a pretty quiet car ride home, but it was something that, you know, gave me confidence, you know, it gave me that extra boost that I really needed at that time. I was competing a little bit against kids, but, you know, not really. I was just competing against dad, and I finally got him.
I remember speaking to, I know, a guy that you looked up to as a kid, Adam Scott, was the 100th episode of this show, and he talked about beating his dad and not knowing what to say in the car on the way home, whether to be quiet and humble or whether to give it to his dad. How did you approach dad? Because I've got kids, and I'm at the point now where I can't run as quickly as my daughter, Cam, who's 13, and it is humbling. So how did you go with your dad? Did you go hard, or did you just let him stew for a couple of days?
Yeah, I think I just let him stew for a couple of days. I didn't really say much on the way home. I knew he was kind of pissed off. So I just kind of didn't say anything. I think I told Mum when we got home, and I think Mum may have given it to him a little bit, but that was about it.
Back to Smithy in a moment. During this episode, Cam will talk about his move to Live Golf, a brand new tour that has the golf world talking and at times, to be fair, fighting. The upstart taking on the all-powerful USPGA Tour. It's divided golf. The CEO and commissioner of Live Golf, the frontman who has taken a lot of heat for his role at Live, is Greg Norman. Next week, the great white shark himself, G. Norman, joins us on the Howie Games, which is super, super cool, to talk all things Live and why he's committed to change, no matter the personal cost.
Good morning, Howie. How you doing, buddy? It's great to be on your show.
Huge moment for Live Golf. The player in his absolute prime, the world number two, Cameron Smith. Schwartzel is our inaugural Live Golf winner.
The emergence of a competitor to the PGA Tour has benefited everyone that plays.
Well, it's different style of golf.
Well, it's golf, but louder. Adelaide will take centre stage when the Live Series arrives in town next month.
Live Golf isn't even a year old, and this golf league has the entire golf world buzzing.
Greg Norman, next week on the podcast. Let's get back to Smithy. So, obviously, you go through golf pathways. Are you at school and at high school, Smithy, I'm going to be a professional golfer? Is that what's on the eye line, or are you thinking other things as you're going through school, or were you that good that was going to always be your path?
I think, I took school seriously enough. I don't really think I put all my effort into school, for sure. I think I did enough to pass all my classes, make the parents happy, and then it was all about golf for me. I really, from a pretty young age, probably since, 12 or 13, all I wanted to do was play golf and, play golf for a living. And that was really my mindset the whole way. Whenever I had a spare second,
yeah,
I was at the golf course trying to make myself better.
So what's the first tournament, amateur, what's the first thing you won on a golf course?
It probably would have been something at one team, or like a sub junior competition or something, like a little 9-hole comp. That's where it all kind of starts, I think. And
yeah,
from there, I had, I got so lucky. I had some of the best parents, or probably the best parents, I think, ever. You know, Mum and Dad drove me all over the countryside to compete in tournaments. And I think if it wasn't for them, I definitely wouldn't be where I am today.
Well, follow the themes of what you've learned along the way, Cam, and we'll get to it right then, but we've got a lot of kids listen to this show, which we're really lucky, a lot of that will be doing exactly what you're doing, travelling to sport around the country, listening to the podcast. As a young fella, when you didn't meet your own expectations on the golf course, how did you deal with it?
You know, my old man had a really good saying really early on, and it's something that's kind of always stuck with me, and I think it's especially kind of a golf one, but he said some days are diamonds and some days are duck shit, and that's just how it goes. I've kind of taken that through my whole career. I think, you can work, tirelessly at this game and at sport in general, and sometimes it seems like you go backwards, and I think that saying really made me become like a process kind of person. It really made me tick the boxes, make sure I was doing the right things, and just know that the results are going to come. I think as a young professional, it's pretty easy to get in your own head and, think that this isn't for me. There was for sure times in my career where I thought, I don't know if I'm really cut out for this, but I just kind of took Dad's philosophy there and kept grinding at it and kept working, and, eventually it paid off.
Give me an example, if you can cast your mind back, when you said in your young pro career when you thought, this is not for me. Is this after a series of bad rounds? Is this looking at other golfers on the practice range thinking, I'm not at that standard? Take me to a situation like that.
Yeah, I mean, I was pretty early professional. I turned pro when I was 19 or 20. I can't really remember, but Yeah, I was just young and, you know, at that point I was still really skinny and like you said, you're walking down the range, you know, hitting next to blokes that are 6 foot tall and hitting at 300 metres can be quite intimidating. I missed a tea time and actually in US Tour Q School as a young professional, and that was kind of heartbreaking for me. I thought that was kind of where my world kind of lied. And
well, how do you mean? Time. What you, or you slept in, or you were late, or something?
Yeah, I slept. I was late. I basically thought it was starting the next day. Yeah.
Oh, so you're a day late.
Yeah, that was kind of my first kind of step as a professional, and to do that was pretty heartbreaking. And you know, I guess in hindsight, it's probably one of the best things that ever happened to me. I got to go to Asian Tour School. I played on the Asian Tour for about 18 months. Yeah, had some. Made some really good progress. The competition, obviously, not as good over there, and built some confidence and played well enough to get into some tournaments in the US, and ended up getting my tour card through that way, which doesn't happen very often. So it was a pretty cool kind of roundabout way to get there. But yeah, learn a lot of stuff in Asia. It's one of the coolest times of my life, I think, playing over there, traveling with really good friends, and having a blast and playing, you know, really good golf as well.
To take a couple of steps back, so tell me about the Asian Tour. So 2014, I've got it written here, Cam, you're on the Asian Tour. Tell me about some of the flights, some of the hotels and some of the places you played golf on the Asian Tour, because I occasionally see it pop up on TV and I've seen a fair bit of the world and I think, holy moly, I've never heard of that place.
Yeah, we travelled to some pretty kind of remote places, I guess, and you know, I think, you know, first and foremost, it makes you're grateful for what you grow up with in Australia. It's, you know, Australia's very close to my heart. I think it's the best place in the world still to this day. I don't think I've travelled to a nicer place. Mm. And yeah, so we travelled to some random places, stayed in some really shitty hotels and ate some really shitty food, had deli belly a bunch and did all that stuff. But, you know, those experiences, you know, they make you learn and they make you a better professional too. You know, eating at the right spot, you know, matters sometimes.
One step back from that, your first tournament, you were 19 when you turned pro. What's the first tournament that you played that had money on the line and how did you go?
I think the first tournament I played as a professional was actually in Queensland. I think it was the Queensland Open at Brookwater.
Okay.
I think that was my first tournament as a professional, and I think I finished fourth or fifth, so I had a pretty good run in it. I was ever really in the hunt to win, but I did all right. Yeah.
What would have been the check approximately that came in the Queensland Open to finish fourth or fifth?
I'm going to say it was like 8,000 or 7,000 or something like that. It's a pretty good check.
And did you splash out and buy anything or not with your first 8,000 as a professional golfer?
I remember going to the Normandy Hotel and the boys and I had a really good night that Sunday night.
Which does seem to be a theme throughout your career, yeah. To be fair.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that for me was kind of my first big check. You know, until then I'd been working at the RSL and getting, you know, $20 an hour. So it was a pretty big pay upgrade.
Mate, I have so many questions for you about life as a professional golfer that I don't have time to ask them all. But the thing that strikes me about professional golf, I used to work on the golf at Channel 10 when it had the PGA and the Australian Open, and we used to go to Coolum every year. And you'd go on the range before the round and you'd watch 100 guys and they all would smack the ball dead straight off the tee, 250 plus, and you think every guy here is just so good at the game. So when you're first on the range in the PGA Tour and the guys that you've been watching on telly are around you, how's that experience for a young kid?
Yeah, it's I think, you know, when you're there as a young kid, you got to watch as much as you can. You know, you're playing against them, so you want to beat them. But there's so many, you know, old guys out there, and I think there's a lot of guys as well. Even as a young guy, you're going, well, he's 20 in the world. Like, I can beat that guy. Like, you see him hitting balls on the range. So you kind of get that feeling a fair bit. But those guys, you know, that have been doing it for 10, 20 years, they just know how to get the ball around. They know how to play golf, basically. And that takes time.
So who have you stood next to on the range as a young fella or stood on the tee at the first? I asked you earlier on about people that have impressed you and looked to your side and thought, wow, I'm about to play against X.
Oh, geez. I don't know. I think probably Scotty, actually. It probably took me 3 or 4 years to play with him out on tour. But until then, the tour kind of works like you. If you're a young fella on tour, you kind of play with all the other young fellas on tour. And then you kind of, if you play good, the weekend they rank you or, basically re-rank you. So you play with someone else. And I remember I was having a pretty good weekend and I ended up playing with Scotty on a Saturday, I think. I think he beat me by about a million. But I remember playing with him. Actually, you know where it was? It was actually in Australia. I got paired with him and it was at Huntingdale.
Oh, right.
And, he went out the front nine. He had about 30 on the front nine, so it was 6 under through 9 holes. And I'm going, holy cow, there's no way I can beat this fella. And, you know, from there, just kind of had to play my own game. But I remember shooting myself on the first tee with him going, there's no way I can beat this guy. You know, Scotty is a pretty athletic guy. He's good looking. He's got everything going for him. He's a good golfer. You know what I mean? Like there's a bunch of stuff that you're like, I'm not meant to be here. But, it was a good learning experience again.
So as you progress, was the US Open in 2015, was that the first major you played in?
Yeah, yep.
Cameron Smith, his second shot.
And we've seen plenty of times a lot can happen in this game of golf.
All the speculation that 18 here for the fourth round would play as a par four. It plays as a par five today.
How's that shot?
It'll be an eagle for Cameron Smith to move him to 3 under.
You finished fourth at Chambers Bay. I don't want to get too much into details of golf for those that don't follow golf. Jordan Spieth wins 5 under, you're 3 under, and it opens all sorts of doors for you with exemptions and tour cards. At that stage, or at what stage do you start to think, oh, I can compete with these guys and I can potentially win tournaments at this level? Because I guess belief for any athlete is such an important thing, Smithy.
Yeah. That was definitely a confidence booster. I like to call those tournaments confidence boosters. I think it takes a lot of kind of figuring out to make you feel like you belong. I think for me, it probably took 2 or 3 years to really feel like, all right, I can win a golf tournament. You know, let's get the show on the road. Let's win a tournament this year. So, there was a long period there where you kind of know that you can play and you know that you can keep your tour card and you know all this stuff, but kind of winning is another level. And that sense of belonging, I think, is what you need first before that comes. And that's just kind of hard work, kind of, playing with guys like Scotty and Leish in practice rounds and really just trying to, learn off them basically, take the things that you like and just run with it and make it your own.
And what separates number 50 or number 100 in the world? Like if you think about it, Cam, every Saturday around the world, there's people piling on a golf course. So when you're ranked number 2 in the world or number 4 as you are now, it's an incredible thing if you think of all the people out there and play golf. But what separates the 100th best golfer in the world to the top 10 and then the top 5? Is it physical? Is it mental? What's the major difference?
Yeah, I think, I haven't played with too many guys where they can't hit a certain shot or they can't do. I don't think it's about that. I think it's about having the balls to do it, basically.
Okay.
Under certain circumstances. I think the guys that are constantly up there, they're trying to hit the right shot every time. They're trying to make a birdie every time. They're not trying to protect, 10th place or 20th place to get a nice check and move to the next week. They're there to win and they're there to hit it close and keep, putting those guys under pressure. And I think that's really it, having the balls to do it and having the mental capacity, I guess, to make you believe that you can do it.
So mental capacity fascinates me because the other sports we described, rugby league, the ball's thrown at you, tennis it's coming at you, cricket it's coming at you, whereas the golf, I think all of us hackers find it hard. The ball is sitting there waiting for us and you have to make decisions. Tell me about your mental process going in a major tournament, a big tournament when it's coming down the stretch. Tell me about your heart rate, breathing, mental imagery. Take your time. Like, take me deep into what is required mentally when the pressure is on and how you have to deal with it, Smithy.
Yeah, I think it's exactly what I said before, just trying to hit the right shot and just committing 100% to it. You know, I think when you're playing really good golf, that comes really quite easy. I think when you're kind of playing some ordinary golf, it's quite hard to stand over the ball and make yourself think or make yourself know that you're going to do this. So I really like mindfulness stuff between shots. I do a little thing where I drink some water and I just feel it go down my chest and really just get my mind off everything. And then when I'm at the ball, basically Sam and I will talk about a shot that we want to hit, how far it's playing, and basically what we have to do to get that ball as close as we can get it, you know, to give ourselves a shot at birdie and then just commit to it and hit it. I know it sounds really, quite dull, but basically committing to a shot and then just trying to hit it is probably the hardest thing, but it's probably one of the easiest things as well when you think about it. Like, it's not really a hard process. It's definitely in between the ears there for a little bit.
It's not dull at all, mate, because it might be dull for you to describe because it's what you do day in, day out. But for listening from a mental perspective, it's not dull at all. So what happens when you're in a crunch situation and you play a poor shot and you stick it in the water or it goes into a bunker or into the trees? How do you go and approach the next shot when you're on the back foot, for want of a better term?
Yeah, I think you got to kind of have short memory when you're playing golf. The quicker you can move on to that next shot and really think about, what you're going to do to get the ball close and, save a par or sometimes even save a bogey. And, you know, sometimes those really big par putts or really big bogey putts kind of give you the more energy than, you know, making two or three birdies in a row. That hole in that, 15-footer for par kind of feels like a birdie. It feels like an eagle almost sometimes.
And what's the most nerve-wracking tee shot? Like, to me, from the outside looking in, it would be the first tee at Augusta. And from Australia, ladies and gentlemen, we have Cameron Smith. And everyone does their polite clap and then you have to walk. Like, that must be terrifying.
Four, please. Now driving, Cameron Smith.
Yeah, it is terrifying. it's amazing. I've played this game basically my whole life, and I'm still shitting myself on the first tee every week. It's something else. It's something that you never really get used to, I think. And I think it's good though. It matters to you. It means that you care about it and you want to go out there and win it.
That's the end of Cam Smith Part A. So much more to come on the back nine on Part B.